Well, the LA Rams are Super Bowl champions, and now the focus shifts to how to build the next Super Bowl champion, and the NFL Scouting Combine in Indianapolis, a huge piece of that. So welcome, everybody, to this Combine Week edition of Move the Sticks. Hello, Rhett Lewis here with you, our former NFL scouts, along for the ride as well, lead draft analyst Daniel Jeremiah, and veteran of the 1994 NFL Scouting Combine, Bucky Brooks. What's up, fellas? So look, DJ, just wanted to let you know, Bucky and I have already committed to running the gauntlet as long as you fire up the old arm on one of the QB stations. Are you down with that?
Yeah, I'm the first throw, right? So that's right in front of you. That's a stationary target. That's my role. I know my limitations.
What do you think, Buck?
Red, I'm going to let you go down the gauntlet on your own. I think I am done trying to look and turn and find the ball. I don't want to get bonked in the head.
Yeah, no, that's right, because we have seen that happen a time or two. Bar none, my favorite drill of the entire combine, and we will see that on Thursday night in prime time. And you will also see the quarterbacks throwing on that day as well. Quarterbacks, wideouts, and tight ends getting rolling for you, 4 p.m. Eastern time. Get that throwing workout in prime time starting March 3rd. And then we follow with prime time workouts with the running backs and offensive line on Friday, D-line and linebackers on Saturday, and then an afternoon affair for the DBs and special teamers on Sunday, all right here on NFL Network, the NFL Scouting Combine presented by Verizon. Cannot wait, just a couple of days away. We're all making our pilgrimage to Indianapolis here today and tonight in Bucky's case. So guys, let's get this started with to-do list for both teams and players at the Combine. DJ, start with you on the team side. What are some of the checklist items for teams as they descend upon Indianapolis?
Well, all these teams, Rhett, have had their draft meetings over the last couple of weeks, and they've set their board. They've discussed these players. And when you look at the combine, really it's about filling in the gaps. You know, what are the questions that arose? What are the flags that maybe came up in these meetings? And that could be something speed related. It could be something, you know, football intelligence, which you're going to get a chance to visit with them and get a chance to get a grasp of where they are there. It could be a medical situation. You just want to see where these guys are medically. So from a team standpoint, your draft is kind of anchored right now. There's going to be some movement, but not a lot going forward. You need to fill in the gaps here, and the combine does a wonderful job of helping in that regard.
Yeah, no question. And, you know, Bucky, as a from the player perspective, as we give the good folks at home a look at what that 1994 combine was all about for you back there in Indianapolis, there it is. All right, look, so look, adjusted for inflation,
that 4.5 he does not agree with
like
that 40.
4.35. Am I right?
Yeah, we got that down at a pro day.
That's okay. That's what I'm talking about there. All right, so look, DJ laid out the team checklist. If you are a player about to work out for all of these talent evaluators, GMs, coaches, and scouts, what is on your to-do list?
Well, the main thing that you want to do is you want to get yourself ready to go and work out and to be at your best. The thing that you have at your advantage now, everyone knows what the drills were. Back in 94, we didn't know what we were stepping into. So guys have been working for the last 6 to 8 weeks, getting the 40 down, understanding how to do the three cone and the L drill and all the other drills that you have to do. They've been working on their individual stuff. And then the final part of it is, let's make sure that we crush the interview portion of this deal, because this is the first time guys have gotten the opportunity to really talk to you, not only about who you are and what you're about, but to dig into your football intelligence. Let's make sure we put on our best showing to enhance our opportunities being drafted early.
And look, I think we all understand that nobody's going from the 350th player on everybody's board to the 25th player on everybody's board if they run a fast 40 here. But it is a piece of the evaluation process as we get closer to the NFL draft, and we'll keep kind of digging down on that as well as we go through some of these position groups and players that we're excited to watch. But first, a look at some guys we will not see in Indianapolis, starting with quarterback Matt Corral, still recovering from the high ankle sprain he suffered in Ole Miss's Sugar Bowl loss to Baylor a couple of weeks ago. That was thought to be a 6 to 8 week injury, and he is ahead of schedule on that timeline, but not quite ready for Indy. Expectation, according to our Tom Pelissero, is he will be full go. Matt Corral will be for his pro day on March 23rd. Much more on the quarterbacks that will compete just ahead. All right, the best cornerback in college football back in 2019 is a true freshman. will not be able to work out in Indy. That's LSU's Derek Stingley Jr., still recovering from a foot injury that limited him to just a couple of games this past season. So he will have an important pro day ahead of him as he tries to make his case that he can still be as dominant as he was back in 2019. And after an extended season for Alabama offensive tackle Evan Neal following their national championship game appearance, Neal will not participate in the workout portion of the combine. A prospect both DJ and Bucky have mocked as the number one overall pick of the Jacksonville Jaguars will now look ahead to his pro day next month. All right, good news, though, especially on two of the marquee position groups as we enter the combine. Edge rusher Aiden Hutchinson will work out. And as one of the top offensive tackles, Ike Ekwonu from NC State will also work out. So that good news as those guys will take top billing at their respective position groups in Indianapolis. And as you look at this, Bucky, does the offensive line resonate with you as one of the kind of marquee groups to watch this week?
Yeah, I think so. I think you need to keep your eyes on it because all we have to do is look at the Super Bowl and understand the importance of making sure that that offensive line is together. DJ certainly has brought to light that you don't necessarily need to have first-round talents to be able to field a Super Bowl champion, but, man, it certainly enhances your opportunity if you have good players. And so when I think about this offensive tackle class, particularly at the top of the board where the Jacksonville Jaguars will either have an offensive tackle or maybe a pass rusher at their disposal, keep an eye on the guys like you talk about Ekwonu, Chandler Cross, and some of the other guys that you have there. You got to make sure that you look at those guys up front that are blocking.
For sure. I'm going to look at the cornerback position, guys, is one I'm really excited to see. I mean, I think, you know, each and every year we get some of the fastest 40 times from that cornerback position. And I think this year, and I know you guys would agree, there is some serious top shelf talent at the cornerback spot, starting with Sauce Gardner right there, number one from Cincinnati. Did not allow a touchdown his entire career, according to PFF. Pretty good mark there. There you see Andrew Booth from Clemson. I mean, there are some guys that are going to put up some serious numbers here in this group, and I feel like there's depth to find a really good player, you know, even as you get into the second, third, fourth rounds. You know, guys like, look, DJ, you were on him early, Washington's Kyler Gordon, and the more I have watched of him as of late, really love the way that dude competes in aggressive corner and kind of thrived, you know, getting a lot of that action with Trent McDuffie on the other side as teams tried to move away from him. So I'm really excited to see this cornerback position. DJ, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, Rhett, yeah, I think we're all fans of big, fast, and physical and can play the ball. I mean, that's what you saw there from Gordon. You guys have buried the lead here, though. Let's go edge rusher. This is an edge rusher draft. That's where the strength is, and that's going to be the case all throughout the first round and well on into day two. These guys are going to test like freaks now. So you've got the excitement of seeing them on tape. It's going to match up with what we see in the testing. And I'm talking about guys like Jermaine Johnson, who could run in the 4.5s at 260-plus pounds. So Trevon Walker is another one who's going to run in the low 4.6s most likely at 270-plus pounds. So it's a dominant group. It's what this draft is all about. And you talked about it, Bucky, in that Super Bowl where you had a team that couldn't block. Well, you also had a team that could get after you up front that just hoisted the trophy. So I think this is going to be the group that's highly coveted, and they are going to go fast.
Yeah, and DJ, your new top 50 prospects list out now on NFL.com, hot and heavy in terms of the edge rushers at the very top of that list. We'll get to a couple of them a little bit later in this show. But let's now switch the focus from position to player. How about a player, DJ, that you were most excited to see in this year's combine?
Well, Garrett Wilson's my top wideout, and this is a deep wideout class as we've had recently, and we're going to continue to see that trend going forward because that's what the college game has given you. But, you know, to me, he reminded me a little bit of Justin Jefferson in that he enters this combine with really the only question, just how fast is he? Because you see the route running, you see the playmaking, you see the play strength. He checks every single box. Now, with Justin Jefferson, there was some talk, oh, maybe he's going to run in the low 4.5s. And he went out there and ripped off a high 4.3. I think Garrett Wilson's got a chance to do the exact same thing. And in my mind, solidify himself as the premier wideout in this draft class.
Well, guys, I'm going to stick with a wideout turned cornerback. Talking about UTSA cornerback Tariq Woolen. I mean, look, for one, he stands out. He is huge. He is 6'3 and a half as he was measured down at the Senior Bowl in Mobile. Had a pretty good week down there. But the thing that stood out is, you know, they use the Zebra tracking technology down in Mobile at the Senior Bowl. And in all the years that they've been using it, Tariq Woolen was the fastest player on the Zebra tracking technology throughout the entire week. He could run, I'm told, somewhere between the high 4.2s and the low 4.3s. And for a dude that big, that's pretty exciting to me, especially for a guy who's still pretty new to the cornerback position. I think those traits are going to be really enticing for a team hoping to mold him into a real starting cornerback, Buck.
You know, Red, you talk about trying to find someone to mold. I'm looking at a quarterback position, and I'm looking at Malik Willis from Liberty. And one of the reasons why I have my eyes on Malik Willis is because we're talking about tools. And so much of what we've seen from these elite quarterbacks of late, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes, guys who have outstanding physical gifts that it masked and made up for the deficiencies that they may have. And so when you're looking at the quarterback position and we're talking about recent history where those guys who have tools have popped, I'm looking at Malik Willis because if he dazzles during his workout, I think you will see creative offensive coordinators really make a push to make him their next quarterback, because tools give you an opportunity to really expand the playbook with someone who is dynamic and electric as a playmaker.
And we are going to see Malik Willis throw at the combine in prime time right here on NFL Network Thursday night. We'll have DJ and Rich up in the booth for it. Can't wait, guys. Back here on today's episode, time to head back into the body shop. Looking at the AFC East today, and we're going to start with the now back-to-back AFC East champions here, the Buffalo Bills. Bucky, of course, your first team in the NFL back in 1994 as a second-round draft pick of the Bills. So this team has obviously built a terrific foundation with Josh Allen leading the way. What can you see the Bills doing to try to add to that foundation there, Buck?
More playmakers all over the perimeter. You want more speed. Emmanuel Sanders may retire, so maybe you look at wide receiver. But really, you got to balance up this offense so Josh Allen doesn't have to do everything. So maybe a big-time running back. Maybe that running back happens in the second or third round, but they need someone who can tote the mail so Josh Allen doesn't have to do everything. Because if you balance it out and now you're able to save Josh Allen and preserve him where he only has to break out those superhero powers in big moments, in big games, maybe in the postseason, now you get the best version of Josh Allen because somebody else is also doing their share to make sure that the running game is elevated.
Yeah, the guys, this is a top three offense, top three defense. So yeah, they're in a pretty good spot to really take kind of the best available player. But to me, I would look on that defensive line. You saw that need up there on the screen, particularly get some more depth along that interior, be a little bit stouter against the run, give themselves more opportunities to rush the passer. I could see that defensive front being an area they continue to invest in. They did it last year with Greg Rousseau and Boogie Basham. I wouldn't be surprised if they keep going back to that well and just keep adding to that defensive front.
Yeah, and in that division, look, I think offensive line is always a great spot to keep adding depth. But I'm looking at the cornerback spot for the Bills, too, with Tre'Davious White coming off the ACL injury as one of the best corners, you know, in football. Want to make sure that you've got somebody that can slide in there if need be, or also on the opposite side of Tre'Davious White when he's fully healthy. So looking at a cornerback might be one way to go, and certainly could get that done, you know, second through fourth rounds and find a really good player there as well. All right, let's move on now to the New England Patriots here, guys. So the Patriots obviously struck gold with Mac Jones last year, was our top-rated rookie passer as the number 15 overall pick. But Bucky, where do you see them going this year, you know, whether it's free agency or the draft, to really kind of help them get back to the top of this division where they have not been in now 3 years?
Well, Mac Jones was a pleasant surprise for the Patriots the way that he played. Pro Bowl player. So now what you want to do is you want to make sure you build around the quarterback. We've seen the weapons that they have on the outside, Nelson Aguilar, Kendrick Bourne. They've been able to get Jacoby Myers going. But they still need a big-time playmaker, a true number one. Maybe they can go in the draft and find that it hasn't worked out in the past, but it doesn't mean that you don't stop doing it. I think you have to go back and find a big-time weapon in the passing game to help Mac Jones out.
Yeah, I like the fact of getting him some more weapons and just adding some more speed and talent around him, Buck. But you look on the defensive side of the ball, I think free agency is going to dictate what they end up doing in terms of who they lose. They've got a couple linebackers that are up. J.C. Jackson's up. So you can look at the linebacker position. You can look at the corner position. But I'm with you. I think the guts of this team, the foundation of this team, is in pretty good shape. I think getting some more playmakers, you know, be that on the offensive side of the ball, weapons, or on the defensive side of the ball, guys that can take the ball away, and sorting out what they're going to do with J.C. Jackson will be a big part of that.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like a broken record talking about a team here that needs a corner. I mean, that definitely might be the case for the New England Patriots, although they haven't really gone up there in the first round in terms of cornerbacks in quite some time. They've definitely found a spot there in the second and third round to try to go after a guy in the last few drafts as well. But I'm kind of curious, DJ, just a little bit, because Bucky mentioned it, you know, didn't work out with N'Keal Harry as a first-round pick at wide receiver. 21, you know, could be a spot to find one there, but do you feel like the, you know, the issues that they had trying to make it work with N'Keal Harry in the first round might preclude them from going that way again, you know, early in this draft?
I don't think so. You know, I look at the Ravens and how they operate. It's very similar to the Patriots. They have that same DNA with Ozzie Newsome coming from Bill Belichick. And they've missed on first-round receivers. They've continued to go back to that well and try and get it right. And I think when you look inside that division with the Buffalo Bills, you better be able to score some points, man. So to me, the wide receiver position has taken on more value because you can be the greatest defensive mind of all time. And I think Bill Belichick is the greatest defensive mind of all time. You're still going to have to score points to beat the Buffalo Bills inside that division.
And what do we think, guys? I mean, probably 5-6 wide receivers, Buck, that go off in the first round based on the talent and the depth of this group?
Yeah, I love the talent and the depth of this group. And we've seen these wide receivers are now coming into the league ready to play and ready to make immediate contributions. This is another talented class. And I think for the next 5 years, we're going to talk about the talent at playmaker position. Yeah. Pass catchers are really able to be found everywhere.
Yeah, there you go. So it could be one ripe for the taking at 21 when the Patriots are on the clock. All right, guys, one of the things that we talk about with the combine is by now you've watched, you know, a ton of tape on all these prospects, and you have some grades that are very similar for players at the same positions. And so you can use pieces of the combine to help separate those players, whether it be something that happened in an interview or something that happened in testing or in an on-field workout, that kind of just helps provide a little separation. So that's what we're doing here with Traveling Partners. Talking about some running backs, DJ, by the way, Breece Hall, your number 35 overall player, and Isaiah Spiller, your number 36 overall player. And Bucky, these are two of your top three running backs on your top five positional rankings. So how could we use the combine here, Bucky, to maybe try to separate these guys out ahead of the draft in April?
Well, the one thing we know about the National Football League is really about the passing game. And so the way that we can separate these two is to see who is the more natural and potentially the most impactful pass catcher of the bunch. When I think about Breece Hall and what he's been able to do throughout his time at Iowa State, this guy's just a touchdown machine. He's a scoring machine. He puts the ball in the paint consistently as a runner, as a receiver. He brings a lot to the table. When I look at Spiller, Spiller's kind of like that old school slugger that can run in between the tackles. He finishes with power. He kind of wears you down with more attempts and carries. Both of these guys are terrific three down players. You have to make a determination. What style three down back do I like? Because, man, it's really tough to pick between Hall and Spiller when it comes to this evaluation.
Yeah, you know, the fascinating thing about Matt Campbell, the coach at Iowa State, you go back to Kareem Hunt when he was at Toledo. He's been able to identify and develop backs. You look at David Montgomery, the job that he did with him, and now you have Breece Hall, who's as naturally and as instinctive as any player. You want to talk about patience? There are times where it looks like he's walking to the line of scrimmage before he sees what he likes to see, and then you see him hit the go button and take off. He catches the ball in a big-time way out of the backfield. You see some big-time one-handed catches. And then Isaiah Spiller, guys, I thought maybe one thing that would go in his favor a little bit was the speed column. I thought he played a little bit faster than Breece Hall, maybe a little more sudden. But I've been doing a little recon, doing a little homework, and I think Breece Hall might surprise us once he toes the line there in Indy, run a little bit faster than we think.
Well, look, I mean, a guy that put up 23 touchdowns from scrimmage, second in all of FBS, you know he can get down the field in a hurry. And perhaps we'll see that when he puts his hand on the line at the 40-yard dash as well. Let's move on to another traveling partner tandem. And for this, we'll go to the linebackers. Look at that. That looks like seat 2A and 3A there for N'Kobe Dean and Devin Lloyd on that little puddle jumper into Indianapolis. So, DJ, tell us how we're going to separate these two stud second-level players on the defensive side.
Well, I think everybody's going to love meeting with them, right? You're going to love meeting with these guys because the leadership is off the charts. From everything I've been told, the intelligence combination, the leadership combination, what you want from these two guys. Now, you've got different body types. You know, there's some teams, Devin Lloyd is going to be more to their liking because you're trying to find that Darius Leonard. You're trying to find that Fred Warner, that long, rangy, off-the-ball linebacker. Whereas N'Kobe Dean, to me, reminds me more of kind of a throwback to a Jonathan Vilma type player. He's a little bit undersized, but just has tremendous instincts. And everything he does is fast, guys. He might be under 230 pounds, but he sees it and he goes. He is an outstanding football player. You talk to anybody at Georgia, Bucky, they will tell you this guy was the leader of that dominant Georgia defense.
Yeah, when you look at the tape, you can tell he is the Pied Piper of that defense. Everyone looks to him. He has a commanding presence, natural leader. So you love that. But coming off the heels of what Micah Parsons was able to do as a rookie, you're going to look for guys who have a little more versatility. That's why Devin Lloyd can be attractive. When we look at the tape, there's a lot that he brings to the table. The first thing that stands out to me is just the sheer effort. One of the things that defensive coordinators always talk about, I don't want to have to coach you how to play hard. Well, with Devin Lloyd, when he shows up, that is on his calling card. This guy plays hard. He's a sideline to sideline chaser. He pursues, and he also has natural instincts in the passing game. Time and time again, when you look at the tape, he gets his hands on the ball. And we know interceptions in the National Football League typically come off tips and overthrows. So when you have an instinctive playmaker at the second level who can come after the passer, who can run sideline to sideline, but also has a knack for tipping the ball, the turnovers are eventually going to come. Because of that, there are a lot of defensive coordinators that are going to fall in love with Devin Lloyd when they spot him.
Yeah, you're talking about a dude that's got GPS on the football. Four picks this year, two of them returned for scores. Utah head coach Kyle Whittingham calling Devin Lloyd best player he's coached on the defensive side of the ball, which is saying something there at Utah. And with that, guys, time to go back into the body shop, finish up our conversations here on the AFC East team, starting here with the New York Jets, who I think we all agree had a lot of work to do in the draft last year, and GM Joe Douglas and company did a really nice job getting some big-time players for their franchise, and certainly need to continue that trend this year. Still plenty of holes to fill. Bucky, where do we start?
Look, man, this is a team that needs to make sure their defense can carry water because you're dealing with some great quarterbacks that will be in that division. And so I'm going to go and find a second-level playmaker on defense at the linebacker position. I think you need more speed, more energy, more impact at that spot. And so I'm thinking in the draft that maybe you can find someone, not necessarily in the first round, but in the second round, that can give you that immediate impact. C.J. Mosley has been solid, but, man, they need more speed, more sideline playmakers to allow this defense to kind of get out of the rut that they've been in the last few years.
Yeah, I think you see a middle-round pick to go kind of upgrade that linebacker position. I know they've got a lot of young players in the secondary, a lot of first- and second-year guys. Bryce Hall, I think, is going to be a really good player in this league. But they need a true number one corner. They've got to go find one of those guys, a premier player that they can slot in there on the outside. Then you can look at the edge rusher position. You're going to get Carl Lawson back off the Achilles. He missed all last year, their big free agent signing. But I think adding another edge rusher as well. This defense, you can look at the safety position. They were the worst in the league. I mean, so you've got needs all over the place. Fortunately, they have a lot of dollars to spend. They've got the most draft capital of anybody in the league. So they're in a great position to address those needs. And I would add on the offensive side of the ball, there's some needs there as well. I would say guard would be pretty high up on that list. Put another guard in there opposite of your first round pick last year, Elijah Vera Tucker, who played great. But they need to upgrade that right guard position. I think that's something they could address either in free agency or in this upcoming draft.
Yeah, and look, I think that's a great point. And I think you can never, when you have a young quarterback, you can never have too many targets. It feels like it's been a while since we've had a top shelf tight end wearing a New York Jets uniform. And look, I know that there's one, it's not going to be in the first round conversation, maybe not in the second or third, but a guy that Bucky and I saw in Las Vegas at the East-West Shrine Bowl, Jelani Woods from Virginia, a guy I'd love to see down there as a big-time target in terms of physical stature and big playability for a young quarterback like Zach Wilson. DJ, has there been some love out on the NFL streets for the 6'6" tight end from UVA?
Well, I wrote in my notes when I watched him, he was like one of those moving billboards. When you're driving down the highway and you see those billboards moving, that's what he looks like when he's going down the scene. He is massive. Yeah. And guys hit him going full speed, and he just kind of swats him away here. Yeah. He's had some drops. He needs to clean that up, but right. I'm looking forward to watching him work out.
Did still lead the ACC in receptions for tight ends. All right, let's move down to the Miami Dolphins here. Of course, a new leadership at the head coaching spot with Mike McDaniel coming over from the San Francisco 49ers to assume the head coaching role there in Miami. So as we look at this one here, DJ, I mean, we were talking about old linemen for the Jets. Same goes here for the Dolphins?
Yeah, I think O-line and free agency. You know, they drafted a lot of young guys on that offensive line. Go out and get a proven veteran. You can plug in the mix. You know exactly what you're buying. You see the cap space. They got over $60 million to spend here. So that would be an area I would look. And then, you know, Buck and I have been talking about this for a long time about track team, right? This is one of those teams I think you put a track team around Tua Tagovailoa. He's extremely accurate and efficient underneath intermediate. You've got Jalen Waddle. We saw what he did with the massive amount of targets last year with 100 catches. Man, what if Jameson Williams from Alabama, who's coming off of that ACL, it's a standard ACL. It should be a full recovery. You know, might have to miss maybe the first half of the season this upcoming year. But man, can you imagine one slant on one side to Waddle? You throw another one on the other side to Jameson Williams. These are 10-yard throws that become 60, 70, 80-yard completions. That would be fun to watch.
It would be fun to watch. You know what else is fun to watch? When Mike McDaniel's guys get creative with the run game. So we know how they traditionally do when you run this Shanahan system. You don't like to invest a first-round pick in a running back, but somewhere early, they need to get a legitimate dude and a straight-line dude who can put his foot in the ground and is very decisive, and he fits that zone-based scheme that has given the league fits for, like, the last 30 years. And so if they can get a big-time runner behind Tua Tagovailoa and they can run the RPOs and the movement-based passing game to go with the run game that really likes to do it on the edges, then we can see this Miami Dolphins offense put points up and see their quarterback finally play at a comfortable level that was very similar to the way that he played at Alabama.
Yeah, probably not in the first, second, third round conversation as one of the first running backs off the board. But Bucky, I feel like we might slowly be bringing DJ on board with the FCS leader in rushing yards this year from South Dakota State, Pierre Strong.
That's Bucky.
You're getting close.
That's off Bucky's recommendation. I listened to Bucky. I gave him the Bucky bump. Bucky lobbied for him. I listened and I bumped him up a little bit.
Yeah. Okay. You know, I'm going to remember this next time we have a phone conversation about prospects. Okay. Pierre Strong's name may or may not have come up, but that's okay. I love it. Guys, that's the Body Shop for today. Again, we'll keep doing this throughout the next couple of weeks here on Move the Sticks as we put a division in focus each and every week. Kyler Murray just completing his third season as the Arizona Cardinals starting quarterback after they took him number one overall in the NFL draft. And there's been some just kind of odd feelings recently since the season has ended. Kyler, of course, scrubbing all that Cardinals mentions from his social media and, like, you're wondering why. Well, it turns out Kyler Murray's agent, Derek Burkhart, released a statement today outlining Kyler's desire to be the Cardinals franchise quarterback and to get a contract extension. Certainly understand all of those business aspects that come with being a franchise quarterback, and that's what we're trying to figure out here. So, Bucky, how are you kind of digesting all of this drama that we've seen take place down in the desert with Kyler and the Cardinals?
Look, it's a lot of silliness coming from Kyler Murray and his representatives when it comes to wanting a contract extension. It's one thing to want the contract extension. It's another thing to go about it in the right manner. When you are a team coming off a very disappointing loss in the first round of the playoffs, in which your quarterback, Kyler Murray, who wants the contract extension, didn't play well and maybe has not exhibited A-level leadership qualities, it's hard to go public and be so bold with your demands. And so as we talk about quarterbacks, we can talk about their physical talents, but it's a leadership position. And right now, I don't think Kyler Murray has exhibited the kind of leadership that you want from your QB1. And he and his representatives have to figure out how to make this right. So ownership would feel great about giving him the contract while not necessarily making it a situation where it's Kyler versus the rest of the team when it comes to his standing in the locker room.
If you were the Cardinals and you were trying to make Kyler maybe a little bit more happy about the way he feels about the organization, is there a player or position that they could address, whether free agency or draft, to kind of accomplish that?
Well, look, I mean, on the outside, Christian Kirk is a free agent. They got to figure out what they're going to do with A.J. Green. So they have to give him another weapon to go with DeAndre Hopkins. And then remember, James Conner is also a free agent. So running back, wide receiver, they got to make sure they take care of that.
Okay, and so a reminder, the NFL Scouting Combine is coming up here on Thursday. Quarterbacks, wideouts, and tight ends kick things off 4 p.m. Eastern time. You can check out a big portion of that workout in prime time, as the next couple of days will as well. Friday and Saturday. Friday, you get the running backs in the O-line. Saturday, D-line and linebackers. And then Sunday, all eyes on those defensive backs in an afternoon affair, 2 p.m. Eastern time, inside Lucas Oil Stadium, all right here on NFL Network. Can't wait for that. We've all got planes to catch to get out to Indianapolis. It's going to be a lot of fun, guys. Really looking forward to, you know, what we use the combine for, like we were saying just earlier in this show, chance to separate some prospects, learn a little bit more about them, and that's our goal here for the next couple of weeks as well as we get closer to the NFL draft. Thanks so much for being here with us on this Move the Sticks Monday. We'll catch you later this week.